Speaking of holes, from holes. The more I speak, the more I disperse of it. The more I disperse of it, the more it becomes another story. A story not belonging to me. This way, it goes away, another way, anyway. The more I speak, the less I hear. The more I speak, the less I am here. Nothing but a voice. Nothing but a pleasant feeling. Until you start feeling your knees again. Remembering that they're also part of your body. A pair of functional limbs. Doing their best to act as a support for your voice. Like a tripod supporting a speaker. The experience of the body as a whole is to choose what you let in and what you let out. An eye is not an orifice, but a mouth is. So is a cunt to crack a nostril, there to be filled with material as well as immaterial content, at its own or at others' wills. The orifice is a Sisyphus of its own. You cannot own what is not your own, that is, the words of the others. Speaking is a shared experience, whether it resonates within your own ears or in front of an audience. The orifice can be an oracle or a fissure, depending on the given situation. Speaking at its own speed in its own speech. The speech earns itself when it leaves the body behind. Does a spirit take the shape of a body or forget about its visceral origin and its own invisibility? Geist, spirit, soul, ghost, all living in a corporeal host. A voice that tries to explain itself too much loses its tongue. An eye is not an orifice, but a mouth is. I write in order to expel something from my body, something other than fluids and vapors. Fingers typing, texting, touching the fictitious skin of others. The membrane when one is one-on-one and alone with one another. Some people give away too much. Some people stay away from such. Those who touch have had too much. 90% of people, when asked, say that they are shy by nature. But surely that's a lie, because how would they even be out there answering that very question? The remaining 10% cannot bring the life and soul to the party all by themselves. The expulsion of language injects my inner experiences into a communal body, making the words less a part of my own body, hoping to get rid of the constraints of my own frame, if only for a second. It has always bothered me, the body. It has always bothered me to be a body at first glance, and as well, a female one at the second. It has always bothered me to see what's in front of me, but still imagine that it could be something else. If water can turn to wine through the force of speech, why am I forced to remain so solid? If the body is up to 60% water, why am I forced to remain so firm? Squint and create your own phase-depleting filter. What is in front of you could always be something else, whatever it is, But when you close your eyes, everything is possible. The possibility of an internalized infinity isn't contained within the darkness of my own flesh. When the slits slip open through the force of light, sound, or movement, what is in front of you is once again in front of you. The affliction of vision. The things in front of you define your room, your surroundings, your state of being. This is it. No shift beyond that which it is. What is, what is, what is. Which is to get with it or exit the room. But whenever you exit a room, you will only find yourself entering another. The complex property of your own wandering mind. The room is a frame, the body is a frame, where one piece fits within the other, all covered in a thin piece of skin that you are expected to feel good within. I am ill-equipped to fit within any such thing as a body. Accept, accept, accept. They say it's the only way. There is no escape from the word accept, accept, to accept it. My hands are two identical twins in their own right. Individuals divided by a single line affixed in the middle. You are as tall as you are long, you are as long as you are tall, and as long as you are here, we are caught up in our perpetual pathetic one-to-one ratio of experience. How many human hands can fit within the height of a horse? It depends on both the hand and the horse. Each hand has its own idea of right and wrong. In the same way that I never felt at ease with being just one, singular, in order to understand myself as a whole. When I voice out loud, I am many, as one's own words are never one's own, but stolen from the many worlds of others. Nothing is new to anyone anyway. The only difference lies in the saliva that seals the words. I prefer to speak by tongue and type by hand, using my tongue to type where there is no style to choose from. Have you ever seen yourself reflected in one of those rounded, magnified mirrors? Don't. The reflection is far from the one you have of yourself, in the same way that your skin will never be completely one with anyone else. Sex is not the same. Sex is skin against skin, skin against skin, but never one being fully immersed with the other. Never immersed enough. There is always a separation, a painful separation between you and your lover. The skin knows this will never last. The sex, the life. You are you, and you are both of us in a we, and we are he as well as she, and still the skin in between. Always. That suspended layer of separation, covering the blood, expanding underneath, but never running over. It bothers me to be that body in such a one-to-one ratio. When you love like no other, you want to be the other. But it is never enough. What you want is to be multiple people and at one with the other, all at once. Complex, building, temple, property, house, shed. But what is in between always comes in between. You want to turn your insides to the outside, but you don't, because you know it will never fit into the limitations of the room that you have chosen to be within. Instead, you get over your bodily highs and look down at the letters on the sticky keyboard in front of you, observing that the S and the E and the A are completely illegible, leaving nothing but a mnemonic physical assumption about their verbal whereabouts. The X, however, barely remains touched. You decide to give it some special attention by pressing it down gently with your index finger. X. The letters S, E, and A might be illegible, but my fingers have memorized their location, placed on the left side of the keyboard, all within the finger's reach. It explains the recurring pain in my left shoulder, which never lets go no matter how much I twist and turn and stretch, hanging myself on rails and entrances with all my weight, or raising my hand to ask the presumably wrong, right question. My right hand takes a holiday and doesn't type what it sees. I never miss the sea until I see it again in front of me and say it out loud. I miss the sea. And that being said, I jump in, only to forget how cold it is the second my skin hits the surface. The body and the sea make for another pair of bodies that can never be fully immersed with the other. Once I'm back on dry land and I forget again. Sea is a texture you can never bring home. Sea is a sense of its own. Try taking a shower and tell me it's the same. A stream of neatly divided strands of water standing, staring at the corner of your tiles and the flourishing mold stain so dark you're forced to close your eyes and to avoid soap seeping in while turning blind eye to a decay of the rooms where you have decided to spend your life. I live in a city with little to offer on the horizon. There is a dark river ebbing into an even darker canal. No heights, no mountains, no peaks, nothing to ascend nor climb. It's been 10 years and ongoing. I was supposed to leave it all behind by tomorrow, but the world is on hold and so am I, because I am in this world. I am in this world until tomorrow, whether I like it or not, until I close my eyes to reality and remain at one with the insides of my fleshy eyelids. It is warm there. Warm and neat and cute. Once when I had a crown fit repair a broken molar, the dentist assistant brought out a range of fake enamel samples, telling me to choose the one that felt right. There were 10 shades available, from bright white to dark yellow. The use of the word choice was a false promise. Having made my decision, they placed the sheet against my teeth, whispering a conclusion among themselves. So when I looked up, they had circled a shade far more closer to the yellow side than the whiter options. Their chosen shade looked like a white cup slightly soaked with black tea, a stain hard to remove, if at all possible. That's how it is when you eat and eat and eat. It stains and remains in places you never thought you would look twice. Until you bend over, until you look up, until you see the fourth tooth below from the back and say, fuck, is this how it all turned out? I told you not to look in the magnifying mirror. Brownish yellow, or yellowish grey, greyish, sallowish brown. I look at the bright and shiny white samples, 5 shades down on the sample sheet, and wonder who these lucky, pristine people are. People who would go home with such stellar samples fitted to their crown, unashamed to say cheese whenever it's called for. The successful teeth, the beautiful teeth, the restrained teeth, the teeth who grit and say, a coffee a day, no more, no smoking, no smog, no dirty talking. It is also said that trauma might change a tooth to pink, yellow, or dark grey colour. As I leave the office, I am asked to pay a full rent's worth of a sallow yellow-brown sample of microscopic enamel. The square metre price of that shitty shade must be the same as the flat of a toe, must be the same as that of a flat in Tokyo, New York and London combined. I close my door to the trauma, while the dentist reminds me that I tend to grind my teeth at night. She repeats a set of words, asking me to raise my eyebrows whenever one of them resonates with me. Stress, self-sabotage, sacrifice, sadness, saliva, scandal, Satan, sodomy, do you see a pattern here beyond the electorates? I say yes, between my clenched teeth, and pull out the credit card from the crack of my butt to pay the three-figure sum up front. During the day, I'm civil, articulate, polite. All smooth, no spikes. A smooth tongue ready to lick any surface that longs to endure its prime, moist texture. P and Q, Q and P, the two letters best buddies for good girls drink their milk and lick it too. Teeth are not bones, but as far as you can see, they look the same, white and milky, made to break easily, so frail at the first crack. Teeth are not like eyes or nails, less brittle and delicate. You cannot paint them in pastel or glitter, if they seem too sallow to bear the sight of. Teeth are not skin, as they do not renew themselves once they are damaged, but instead leave you rotting behind your grin. I didn't smile much until I turned 16. There was something about displaying my mouth to the world at all times which disgusted me. If there was a hole in the ground, I would have hidden it, mouth and all. A hole within a hole within a hole within a hole. Come find me. At times, somebody would peep down that hole and ask me to open either orifices. What for? I asked. What's the reward? I shouted back. There was always something they wanted to shove in, but honestly, I never thought it was worth it, and so I decided to remain a closed system like before. A hole within a hole within a hole within a hole. I cannot tell at what point in time I cracked open the holes to let somebody in, but now I open them all constantly for anything, for anyone, as neat drinks I wish I had two mouths at once, like the nature of my hands, one passive, one active. I expect too much of it otherwise. If I would lose my tongue, I'm afraid I might be unable to locate you again. But how can I be afraid of losing something that is already lost? I grind my teeth at night, non-stop, even if I've stopped saying the letter S. The dentist warns me that there will be nothing left but stumps if I don't do something about it. I do nothing about it. Speaking out loud, it is an expulsion of language. Like a verbal volcano, I walk around with my cracks and open crevices, verging on any future vents. 10 days, 10 centuries, 10 families, 10 dogs, all of it might vanish in one single explosion. Nobody knows when it will happen, how it will look, but that's the peaking beauty of it all. You look at the volcano, it looks back at you in silence because it's only sleeping until it ends. A volcano is either dormant or mayhem, but never somewhere in between. I know I'm into you. I wish I was still into you. I miss being into you. I would have stayed there into you, on top of you, until forever. How do you spell forever? Is it one word or not? And if so, is forever and forever two different realities? If you split the word, does it change our concept of eternity? Whatever forever is, the skin still separates, like time. Time is the skin in itself. It displays everything you avoid telling. When you look at the color sheet offered by the dentist assistant, you close your eyes, pick a tone, a very bright one, and claim that it was all like that. All light and bright, without dents or discoloring. You forget the moldy tiles in the shower, and that which is growing between the gaps once you're back swimming through the cold sea. You forget that which gets stuck between whatever and forever. That stain in your groin, the discolored sheets, grains of dust and sand hidden between the floorboards. White strands of cat hair stuck on a mat from 7 years ago. Still stuck there, even if the cat ate. But those who are on the outside of your own body will tell you that the reality is always 5 shades darker, and that you will have to pay up front in cash for any damage done. It's your own fault that you're shady. Accept, accept, accept. There will always be somebody else around to choose that real turn for you. You might like your somber insides. It's warm and welcoming within your own flesh. You can stay there without ever letting anyone in. Inside your own body, living is for free. You are the landlord of your own flesh and blood. Structure, property, premise, establishment, place, spot, dot. Anything can vanish in a split second, in one full explosion. You close your eyes and open your mouth, and in 5 minutes, it's all over. A night which feels like a minute. You can go home now, the dentist says. I go home. I love coffee. I love coffee. I love coffee. I love coffee so much that I once poured it in my crotch in order to love it more than I ever thought was possible. It was an accident, but somehow also not. It was a hot shock to my system, like everything else that hot week. I survived the sting, but not the stain. The presence of his absence burns like the scar itself. Every day I drink coffee. Every day I think of him. Every day, this and never not ever again. When I was young, like young, some girls in my class would spend their weekend dipping tampons into vodka, shoving them up in either hole, leaving it up there for the rest of the night until they passed out. The rest of the bottle lay down rapidly in small shot glasses until the bottle was empty. It was a total spiritual experience from one end to the other. No content spared for the content and all the other empty holes to fill. When you are young, there are so many holes to fill. But I was afraid to fill them, and so I remained stuck in my own hole, eyes closed, waiting for somebody to pull me out. But like the volcano, you can never know who, where, when. On the very last day of the 20th century, I was invited to my very first party. There are a few pictures left of me from that night, both arms held high, head towards the ground, drunk off my face for the first time ever. No spirit of tampons entered my body, only oral shots of vodka. You make love to yourself for making love to what you love the most. Coffee, vodka, cigarettes, Coca-Cola. Nobody makes love to water because nobody loves water more than they love liquor, cigarettes, coffee, and Coca-Cola. You hope to meet someone someday to replace the substances, somebody more solid to your insides than the hollow holes you try to fill with any addictive substance available. I didn't tell myself that in the year 1999, because I didn't know that for a fact. I was too young. It would take another 99 years to live through life and verify a truth like that. First, you fuck. The technician asks me what I need for the night, and I say, I need a mic. To which he replies that this room does not need a mic, it's loud enough as it is, but I say, get me a mic, you dick. It's not a mic for the room, it's a mic in order to castrate the gaze from my eyes to my lips, like I leave my glasses at home in order to avoid any eye contact, because when I perform, I pretend there's only one person in that room, and that's me, which is not a bad case of narcissism, but rather a strategy for poetic survival. I pretend that the room is as small as the smallest box, and like a cat, I push myself in and feel its corners. Even if the room is a palace, I make it smaller because of a small bottle that says, drink me, and I do drink it, and I shrink with it. Who can help me now? It's how it is with free shampoo from the hotel. It's free, so why not take it to the next hotel? There might be nothing worth anything there but a bad night's sleep. I like to keep any confrontation to a blur, a gauze of attention, like one looks at a screen during daytime, in between all the in-betweenness, with little engagement or none. Face, eye to gaze, it all disturbs my concentration. It is a one-to-one ratio of gazing that never ends. I never know what to think when I look them in their eyes and all I can see is boredom. Is anything an appointment anyway? You can always call in and say you're delayed or completely disrespect the whole thing and cancel, can't you? Unless they call you a cunt and remove your work after the opening by turning the volume down to zero in the bus and the bass down to naught. By then you're already too far away to ever know what happened to the sound you left behind, but isn't that the case with most things in life, be it real or abstract? I'm not really talking art. He said he would like to wrap it up, but because of his slurry pronunciation over the phone and a violent wind roaming in the background, I only understood that he wanted to rub it up. I immediately hung up, out of fear what would happen next. Everybody wants to be covered in cashmere. Everybody wants to be covered in cashmere. Everybody wants 100% cashmere spun around their body for 99 cents. 100% cashmere spun 100 times around the world might make the world a softer place. The more the word spins off its center, the more we want to be wrapped up in 100% cashmere. Forget about the goat's right to its own body, steal its thread, dead or alive. Very small goats with very little fat on their bodies might die of stress when left without a coat for the winter. Shop loungewear at a discount price today. Snuggle up, lay low, stay in, go under, and have a cup of tea translated into four languages. Ruhe, relaxing, grand calme, calma interiore. The world is slowly being diluted into nothingness. Thin skin and soft thread is stretched out to cover an area too wide to hide even half of its surface. Stretched and glued down at the corners with a mix of spit and semen. You buy an expensive cashmere sweater when summer is over, but when it starts to itch around your clavicles in late November, you take a look at the tag and find out that the wool is thinned out with 50% polyester. It's half cute, but half plastic. It's too late to complain once you lose a digital receipt among your nonsensical tweets. Fuck it. Everybody wants 100% cashmere in their body for 99 cents. Nobody wants 99% kashmir for 100,000 cents. It doesn't make sense to dilute nor delude yourself with ambitions of greatness when a large percentage of the system is thinned out and nothing but plastic and palm oil. I want nothing great, nothing grey, nothing good. Polly and Esther take a walk. Polly is no parrot, but Esther is. Polly has opinions of her own. Dewy skin, scarlet cheekbones, wide awake eyes. No rouge, because that's for whores. He bit her lips so strongly that she was unable to escape. Unable to say no without ripping his tongue out, thus unable to enable herself to leave the date. He thus interpreted that as a yes. A young woman seated across from me on the train is trying to plug her phone charger into the plug located next to the head of the woman seated in front of her without asking for permission. She attempts to silently fit the charger between the plug and the side of the other woman's head, but doesn't manage to plug it in because the outside of the human ear is boneless and not flat like a plug, and instead she ends up poking the woman's ear with the end of the cable, causing the woman to jolt up from her seat in shock, spilling a cup of boiling hot tea in her lap and over her papers and her pullover. Now hot water is everywhere, so everywhere and everything is a hot mess for the sake of nothing but passive, awkward female timidity, and the disadvantage of a poor, unreliable iPhone battery that always dies, always dead, never alive. And the sad fact is that I could see all this happening right in front of me, but I didn't say a word either before it was too late, because I was passively, awkwardly, femalely, timidly, tacit, too. Experts say that they have discovered the splatters of a shiny soil-backed material found inside the skull of a victim of the Herculaneum that appear to be the remains of a human brain tissue transformed by heat. They say the find is remarkable since brain tissue is rarely preserved at all due to decomposition, and where it is found it has typically turned to soap. To date, vitrified remains of the brain have never been found, said Dr. Pierre Paolo Petrone, a forensic anthropologist at the University of Naples, Federico II, and a co-author of the study. Petrone and his colleagues revealed that the glassy brains belonged to a man of about 25 who was found in the 1960s lying face down on a wooden bed under a pile of volcanic ash, a pose that suggests that he was asleep when the disaster struck the town. Although he was standing right in front of me, his voice came out as nothing but a baseline of human speech, rather than the actual pronunciation of syntax and syllables, similar to how a voice sounds when you're standing behind a closed door, hearing somebody's voice, but rather than grasping the actual words, it is only noise, empty words rotating on the surface of a human tongue, the glossy content unclear to the one-sided eavesdropping ear. He then tried to suffocate her, she said, before forcing her into a bath and telling her he wanted to drown her. It was then that she noticed his orchids, and, after she had complimented him on them, he began to open up about his dead father, a mother addicted to alcohol, and girlfriends who betrayed him. In her delight, Echo rushed to Narcissus, ready to throw her arms around her beloved. Narcissus, however, was appalled and, spurning her, exclaimed, "Hands off! May I die before you enjoy my body." All Echo could whisper in reply was, "Enjoy my body." And having done so, she fled, scorned, humiliated, and shamed. Despite the harshness of his rejection, Echo's love for Narcissus only grew. When Narcissus died, wasting away before his own reflection, consumed by a love that could not be, Echo mourned over his body. When Narcissus looked one last time into the pool, he uttered, "Oh, marvellous boy, I loved you in vain. Farewell." Echo 2 chorus, "Farewell." Eventually, Echo 2 began to waste away. Her beauty faded, her skin shivered, and her bones turned to stone. Today, all that remains of Echo is the sound of her voice. On Piazza Vecchia, the old square in Bergamo, there is a fountain running through the mouth of a female sphinx, placed on all fours, her mouth the spout of an endless stream of water, pushing through her pursed lips. You may place your mouth in front of hers and drink from her endless source of pure, running water. The Sisyphus is an orifice, and the orifice is a Sisyphus. The orifice knows no beginning nor an end, only the circumference of its own whole. I hear myself speak out loud, resonating in another room, only to realize that it is a recording being played by somebody else. They look up and say, "Is this you?" I say, "It is me," while they close the door. While a woman will always have an additional orifice to maintain, correct and protect, I insist on remaining closed system, rather than a gaping hole. I repeated the word "sorry" a few times, until he actually heard the word itself, not only the nervous sound of my mouth's elevated movements. By amplifying the meaning of the word slightly for every repetition, I grew tired of the word itself, tired of my own voice, and no longer felt as sorry as the first time I had uttered the word, but instead somewhat irritated that the meaning of the word had now taken a form that did not represent my inner feelings, but instead became part of the increasingly stale air between us. By the time he had registered the meaning of the word, I was estranged from my own apology, forgetting its origin, purpose, and intent. However, it was too late. I could not withdraw the exhausted word this late in the exchange. I put a mint in my mouth to lighten up the dim situation, which I choked down in a few seconds, although the packaging stresses that the mint is strictly made for sucking. Its full effect is lost otherwise. If he didn't eat, he spoke. If he didn't speak, he ate. Sometimes he would repeat the sentence twice. Sometimes he would order twice as many sausages, all at once, just to make sure that his mouth was never empty, but constantly full, full of a chunk. The very first waft of vanilla appears seemingly out of thin air. I bend over to pick up a pair of shoes and think to myself, those shoes have finally lost their stink. Now they just smell of vanilla. A few hours later, vanilla appears in my drawers as I pull out a knife to slice a cold cucumber. Slicing the cucumber, vanilla. I throw the cucumber out, vanilla. A few hours later, vanilla oozes from my trash can until I eventually throw the cucumber out. Until I eventually throw the trash out. The following day, vanilla punches me in my nose as I push back into a downward-facing dog doing yoga. The scent remains there for the rest of the class as I struggle to both inhale and exhale without nauseating from the waves of vanilla washing over me. There is a pungent stream of vanilla flowing from the hair of the woman seated in front of me at the cinema, so I change seats but find that the smell actually comes from the popcorn. There is vanilla on my pillow when I go to bed. There's vanilla in a freshly opened can of tomato sauce. There's vanilla in my coffee, vanilla on my doorstep, vanilla in the cupboard, drawers, pockets, and vanilla in the deepest corner of my armpit, knee pit, behind my ears. There's even a waft of vanilla between my legs. Now I have a vagilla. There is vanilla front, back and centre, vanilla, all and wherever, whenever, whatever, vanilla. After a few weeks in the state of being unwillingly vanilla, I asked the doctor for a cure against this sickly sweet ailment. The doctor says that the only cure for such a deluded vanilla hallucination is a thorough cleanse, a diet consisting of nothing but lemons. Lemon is the opposite of vanilla. Fresh, cold, acid, light, rejuvenated spirit, a soothing, citric sanity. Remember this, he says in his authoritarian doctor's voice. When life gives you vanilla, try lemons. Views, perspectives, sizes, heights, people, distances, lengths, waves, all of it shrinks at some point. Shrinks to fit into the limitations of the brain when your inner hard drive runs on overdrive and decides to cut most memories in half, leaving you with either the good or the bad part. It's not up to you to decide your fondest memories, it's up to chance. I don't trust the concepts of childhood. It's all feigned and lived by somebody half my size, half my body, half of who I become at this point, now that I am a whole. Looking at things from below, there are things that will seem completely insignificant to you. You reach your full growth potential, and your emotions have finally caught up with you, and you're both your height and your length. You grow up and realize that the world isn't even half your size. You get a pair of prescription glasses once your eyesight lets you down, but seeing so clearly also makes you tired in the long run. And you remove them so that things can remain sharp, unsharp and satisfactory, rather than sharp and unsatisfactory. You look up and look, hey, there is the Eiffel Tower again. And although it's clearly blurry, you notice that it is swaying in the wind, as if it's about to fall. The history books tell you that this very tower was never built to last. So you shrug your shoulders and raise your arm to its grandeur with a plastic bottle of Evian, bought for triple the price down at the crusty newsstand. You say, here's to the future, while taking a large sip. A volume bigger than what actually fits in your mouth. You spit out that which does not fit into a fountain, and wish it all well by throwing in a coin at its deepest end. I remember writing a text as a child, and I remember what it was about. None of the words stuck to my mind. It was about all the things I wished to eat in my life. The list was long. Vomit, omit, omit, admit, scam, scam, init, ever, some sad, said, semen, cinnamon, soap, vape, vomit, armpit this morning, sun. Then off, then on, then off, then on, then gone. And then another minute of stillness. Another minute. Damn it, life a pit. Edit, 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 edit. You've reached your daily limit. Epic. Eclipse, ellipse, lip sealed, shut, come, cast, cock, task force, tick tock, pass forward, Peter Pan, scan, scan. Sunbeam, sun, and done, done, over, and done, number, one, when, fun, und, et, aha, ha, 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 past, quarter past, 10 past, 5 past, won't last, must cost less, at all cost. Must cost less 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 at all cost. Was it my loss or yours? Or was it not a loss at all? Perhaps. What's the point? Western bodies and mind, men, man, when, what, woman, want, or not, what, the fun joke is on me. You see, just send me an invoice, 1, 2, 3, ASAP. Past tense, shoulder to cry and to die for, 10 to 5, 10 to 7, 10 to 10, to 10 to 2, 2 to 3, 2 to 2, 2 to 3, 2 to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I could go on like this. I would go on like this. Should I go on like this? No, but I can't. At noon, Emily was worse. She could only whisper in gasps. Emily had grown so thin that her coffin only measured 16 inches wide. The carpenter said he had never made a narrower one for an adult. The young woman tells the story of an older woman joining a younger woman seated across a table. The young woman is reading the older woman's story in a disengaged voice from her own mobile phone, while the even younger woman is only halfway listening, while scrolling on her phone, looking for something else. Another story, perhaps. A story about another woman. A younger woman than the old woman whose story is being told in such a disengaged voice by a young woman younger than the old woman and her old story. Old stories they have yet to live anew. Every day I wake up to the sound of a Frank Sinatra song. Although Frank recorded over 1,200 different songs during his lifespan, these morning hours have presented only a limited set of options so far. It's either My Way or New York, New York. Every day I wake up in New York. Every day I do it my way in New York. It's so hot here that one is easily stuck doing nothing in a city that has everything to offer. I sit down on a chair covered with PVC coating and the material sticks to my body, gluing my naked legs down to the chair inhibiting my ability to freely move. It is no longer my way but the chair's way. Stuck seated here for a longer period of time, with nothing to do, I start hearing the smooth sound of soft trumpets. I recognize it as the intro to Strangers in the Night. This is proof that the mind expands even when subject to involuntary moments of inertia. Doobie doobie doo, doobie doo doo, doobie doobie doo, doobie doo doo, doobie doobie doo, doobie doo 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 doo. She ascended the escalator, gradually seeing him disappear meter by meter in the meticulous pace of these artificial steps, never to reappear in his or her life as the way she had once seen him. There was no need to ever go down that lane again, no need to touch base at ground floor. She took the next elevator and then the next, all the way up to the fourth floor until she reached the panoramic cafe where she could see the horizon from a small table on the roof terrace. There she sat until the sun set, making sure that he was no longer at the bottom of the escalator, waiting for her to come down. 6 years later, they pass each other in the street. Neither of them notice the other one passing as they are both busy looking at their phones, both busy communicating with someone else. In the same way, they both often sat through breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Both communicating with someone else, both their faces lit by the blue light of a sad sun that never really set, but just kept on growing without providing any vital vitamins or joy to either of them. The song was written impossible for humans, but she nailed it. Charismatic Jane sang. But can you hear the difference between a cheap and an expensive violin? This is a different story about Echo's death. Echo was a very good dancer and singer, but did not like the love of any man. This caused another god, Pan, to become angry. He had Echo killed and split into pieces. These pieces were spread about the world, and later were collected up by the Gaia. Echo's voice was not collected, so it remains all over the world, only to repeat the last words that other people have said. I filter my emails using the keyword thank you, and the amount of emails is as exhausting as the word itself. Thank you for replying. Thank you for coming. Thank you for attending. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your feedback. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your presence. Thank you for your presence. Please excuse my absence. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You thank. You thank. You thank. But what do you think you get back? Sometimes there's no answer in return. Sometimes no answer is also an answer. They say words are more powerful than actions. Or is it the other way around? If you want to discover the origin of a total stranger, drop a heavy stone on their foot and see them erupt with swear words in their mother tongue. Curses are bodily reflexes, as much as they are meaningful words, as content replaces content. The door flaps open and a brutal, unexpected, violent wind breaks through. Who would have thought that such venomous language could hide behind the good grace of a pretty face? I was taught only to speak when spoken to. I do not speak back if I had nothing good to say. But where does this nothing good go when it's constantly suppressed by all the gentle P's and Q's? Every dormant volcano will eventually find its own fine moment to erupt. I often find myself in a physical in-between state, uncertain of what sense I'm actually using, or should be using, in the same way I get confused about time or seasons. Like when you bite into something or hit your elbow on a table, and it hits a nerve somewhere else in your body. My brain freezes sometimes. I step outside of my consciousness and blank out time. After a few minutes, I return and forget the whole thing, returning to business as usual, despite not having a business or an idea of what usual is. I once had a lover who told me that whenever he heard someone speaking about cutting and dissecting flesh, he felt a slight vibration in his balls. My friend was abruptly ghosted by a lover and spent months wondering what went wrong. A year later, she met him by chance while standing in a toilet queue in a bar, and asked him up front why he had left her without an explanation or at least a proper farewell. He told her that he could not stand sitting across of her during meals, chewing and speaking simultaneously with her mouth wide open. He simply could not stand being confronted with what otherwise occupied the space of his own tongue. You know that dream about losing your teeth? Or falling from a height into the unknown? I often dream about technology breaking down as much as I dream about my body breaking down, unable to separate the experience and feeling of both as I merge into one big feeling. The feeling of my skull breaking and the feeling of my computer shattering into a million little pieces are connected to the same feeling of panic. As if both are equally fragile and brittle, as if both can be broken down and folded in a split second, unlike a solid piece of wood or stone, or even a piece of wretched plastic that seems to live on forever and ever. Statues, live centuries longer than the souls they were moulded upon. This is why we make statues, to provide an eternal lithic life for a few chosen individuals, a few honoured men and a few nameless women. We do not make statues from velvet, satin or silk. We make statues from granite, marble and limestone. That way they are solidified and easier to tell apart from all the mere mortals made from less resilient material, which are here to die in silence. ...11:20 PM... the phone rings. I pick it up only to see the name of an old friend who I haven't heard from in years appear on the screen. I look at the phone, I look up from the phone, look down again, I look up and out into the empty room and wonder what to answer. A simple hello seems out of place. What would she say? What will we talk about? Before I manage to answer my internal thoughts, the call stops. She leaves a message on my voicemail. It takes me 1 hour of contemplation before I listen to it. Last time she called me out of the blue, her cat was dying and she wanted some words of comfort, a direction of hope, which I provided, as my voice is trained to do. But since then it's been silent. I don't even know if the cat is still alive, or if it has escaped the box by now. I wait an hour until curiosity pushes me to play the message. But I struggle to hear anything but the sound of a faint bass in a club, and even more faint, among other voices, her voice, saying something completely indecipherable. I try to make sense of her words, but no sense can be made. The message is clearly, or unclearly, not meant for me. Nor was it ever meant to be recorded. The very unclear message is a message in itself, confirming that we are now worlds apart. Every Tuesday at 4 PM, I enter an isolated room to record a set of fictional Norwegian phrases taken out of the blue. Small men, small barn. Bestemor tar den neste trikken. Ikke sitt I trappa, takk, den full av pick og pack. The room is well stocked with 8 water bottles and 4 pencils. There are no windows. I speak Norwegian for 4 hours straight without a proper break. Sometimes I'm asked to reply to questions by pre-recorded male voice, imitating an actual dialogue between us. I have known his voice for 5 years now, but never seen his face. I am asked to soften my dialect in order to not create any confusion on the correct pronunciation. Not all tongues are equal. When I am done, it is 8 PM. All the water bottles are empty, but the pencils remain untouched and sharpened. Mediterranean near Middle Eastern faces work best for vampires and similar characters. They combine severe bone structure with full-sized soft features. Eyes, eyebrows and lips, mixing danger and sensuality into a heady witch brew. The restrained expression of Easterners intensifies the power behind the visage. The energy becomes highly concentrated rather than dissipated. I could always tell when he had been in the elevator. A hint of gasoline, subway, tuberose, vetiver, osmanthus, death, immortelle, cement, and cypress. An obsession by Calvin Klein. Very irresistible, Givenchy. Miss Dior Cherie. Eternity. For man. Still, after applying all of them at once, you smell like nothing but trouble. She got out of the pool and was hit by a strong smell of wet dog. The pool, the water, the grass, everywhere she went, she felt the omnipresent smell of a wet dog. Then she spotted him in the crowd. A familiar face among the strangers, and still a stranger to her.
She inhales smoke from passers-by. Maybe it is the 10-meter-high ceiling. Talking is almost impossible as the room swallows all the words and distorts them. She looks up at the pastel-colored mirror on the ceiling, a pale green line. The pale green line gradually becomes darker shades of green. It goes on and it becomes purple. It goes on and it becomes lavender. The longer her eyes follow the line, the more her body expands, becoming the room. Be a car. Your arms grow into a steering wheel and into a gear stick. Your legs into a clutch, into a brake, and into an accelerator. It is not going to be easy. You are a little too old and you are a little too cautious. That is no good. I am no good today. I am hungover today. I went out with my boyfriend last night. You know what? He dresses like you. He wears a bomber jacket. I hate it. He wears it because he's a bouncer. But you, why do you wear a bomber jacket? Didn't you say you're an artist? What is it like being an artist? What is that you do? Do you paint? Have you always known that you would become an artist? How do you pay your rent? But I was a car. And I saw a small gate ahead. I stopped. A man came out. He looked at me and the car. I knew what he was thinking. He was thinking about what I was doing in the country driving a Mustang, a white Mustang. He asked me if I would be staying at the cabin for the night. It looks like it's going to rain, he said. It looks like it's going to rain, I said. I drove through the open gate. I drove down to the valley of nothing but rocks and mud. It began to rain. I stopped the car and checked if the roof was firmly closed. I switched the wipers on slowly at first and faster soon after to match the speed of the rain. I looked at my face in the rearview mirror. My face, bones sticking out here and there, more and more so. Years of chewing, years of clenching, years of smoking. Hot potato, jacket potato. Potatoes will be eaten and gone. I am a great smoker. I said it as I took a spare cigarette from a stranger. The stranger turned out to be the host. Of course she was. She was wearing a burgundy smoking jacket. She had an air of confidence. It suited her. She took a puff. Do you want a tour? Sure. A dark chocolate brown door opened to a dark chocolate brown corridor. The dark chocolate brown corridor led to a dark chocolate brown door, which opened to a matching dark chocolate brown room. The dark chocolate brown room opened to yet another dark chocolate brown corridor. The dark chocolate brown corridor led to another dark chocolate brown door, and it opened to a dark chocolate brown room. In the middle of the dark chocolate room, a box of Oreo sat.